Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Blind Bargains Cast. I am Joe, back from Mississippi State University. Wow, that was really, really cool. And with me, I've got a guy from the Midwest whose name begins with J, who I've been doing podcasts with for a long, long time. It's Jamie Pauls. Hey, Jamie, how you been,
man? Hey. Doing good. I'm going to do my best to make the outtake show this year. I was really sad that I wasn't in last year.
No, you were too good for us last year. Just not making mistakes, whatever. Rocking and rolling, not popping any peas like a certain other Jason J. Anyway, so that other guy who is off over at Google I.O. In fact, while we're recording, he is over there on the West Coast enjoying all the things that Android P has to offer. If things work out really well, we might get some audio from Jay, and it might be in the middle of the show. If things don't work out well, then JJ's audio, if he gets some, will be on 145. That means that Jamie and I get to play fast and loose with the schedule, which is always a dangerous thing. So that could either be a 20-minute podcast or a two-hour podcast. No, it won't be 2 hours, I can swear to you right now, because I just do not have the energy. I'm still trying to add life to the life-work balance now that I've come back. And coming back was so much easier because I had friends helping me last week. One of the friends that helped me was Greg Stilson of IROD. Greg actually spoke to our counselors that I was training last week and talked a lot about what was going on at IRA, especially with Horizon. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But in the meantime, remember, Horizon is coming out very, very soon. You want to stay tuned to Ira and Ira's website and Twitter to be able to find out more about what's coming up in Horizon. Or, tell you what, if you want to know now, you should go back to CSUN and listen to the sponsored audio that was also done with Greg about the service, what's going on, where they see things are happening in the future. In fact, you'll learn a great deal about smart cities. In fact, that's something you're going to hear a lot from Ira in the future. Smart cities. Stay tuned. All right, so we have a little bit of news, Jamie, and then we'll talk a little bit about the wide awake keynotes from both Google and Microsoft. And
I was supposed to be awake for those. Oh, okay. Oh, cool.
You could. You totally could. Maybe you could sleep standing up. Maybe that's the best way. I actually there was one point in which I just went ahead and filled the dishwasher. I'll note that as we go. But in the news, we have a little bit of information here about KNFB Reader 3.0 for iOS. And so there are some really good things coming to this update, including EPUB support, which is nice. In fact, right before we began the show, Patrick and Jamie and I were playing a game of need it, got it in the feature section, because several other apps have some of these features that were announced. But still, I mean, if you live in this app, this is kind of good, especially if you paid $100 for it ages ago. It's really good to have not just the support for EPUB, but the ability to read things in a landscape mode. And the reason why you would want to scan in landscape mode, business cards. If you scan in the landscape mode, you can actually have links like phone numbers and emails and other things be active. And then there's a whole bunch about PDF and exporting to various cloud services, which is really nice. Any other features kind of strike you here, Jamie?
I mean, just the fact that you can, import the limit on how much you can import, how many pages.
The batch scan thing, go past 50 pages. Huzzah!
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's helpful.
It's great.
I did not look at the Android, nor did I look at the Windows 10 version of the app before showtime. I just really grabbed these show notes, so if you have an opportunity, you might want to check those, if those are the versions of the app that you utilize, and see if some of those supporting features come over to those systems as well. And of course, I'll mention it again here, Envision AI is updating like every week. So if you aren't sure whether you're interested in Envision AI, and remember, there's a subscription service involved there, or the sponsorship, we've talked about that before, follow them on Twitter. And they have a great change log there, because sometimes release notes can get buried in iOS. But definitely keep them in mind, because we seem to have a lot of competitors all going back and forth between Seeing AI, KNFB Reader, and Envision AI.
Yeah.
And OrCam. The OrCam thing, huh?
Yes.
We'll talk about that a little bit in a second. Definitely.
Absolutely.
The IDMate Galaxy also has a database update that came out just about a week or so ago, and it added more things for things like Right Way and some other North American-based organizations. Some Canada grocery stores got updates. So if you already have an ID Mate and you use, say, the Galaxy or one of the other units, you want to check that out. That is a free update and has been made available. One of the new things that I thought was cool, Jamie, is that it told me there was an update. So
yes,
Stan has been our man sending in updates as they've come in for the Orbit Reader and the Galaxy and others. But I turned on my ID Mate Galaxy and heard update now available. And that was kind of a nice thing. So they've really, in 2 years, done a lot to that particular unit to make it a little bit faster and provide a little bit more of the awareness features within the unit.
Yeah, that boot up time is amazing that they've improved. That's pretty dramatic from an earlier version, I think.
You don't have those three long beeps at the end. So you had the multiple short beeps, and then you had the beep, 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 you know, and then you knew, oh, now I can pay attention. It's going to work now, hopefully. Maybe. Yeah. Funny, because we actually did have a minor crash on the update, and we had to pull the SD card and kind of reboot it. But I think it was something I did. I don't think it was anything that happened within Vision America. Not underestimate the power of Ricky and I to find the way to break things. You know, she has a magnetic field. So
yes.
And I inherited that, I think, when I put the engagement ring on her. I think that's how that worked. Yeah. Very, very, very unfortunate.
Well, that ring won't come off, man. If that magnetic thing is happening in years, it's there, dude. It's there.
It's true. She's like Sonic the Hedgehog collecting.
That's true.
So that's how jewelry works. So I understand. Before we walked in here, I just mentioned OrCam a second ago. You've had an opportunity to play with some really cool stuff over at Access World. What's been fun for you? And has there been anything that you've heard our CSUN coverage. Has there been something that you kind of felt like you missed out on?
Well, I've just received an evaluation unit of the Polaris Mini from HIMSS, and so I'm looking forward to digging into that and playing with it. I got to review the original, or the big brother, the Polaris, and really enjoyed doing that. So HIMSS are great to let Access World have demo units and play with them and that sort of thing. I'm also working with version 2 of OrCam. So kind of a, you know what? I will tease a little bit. I will tell you there are things I like. There are some things I think need some work. I don't want to, because there is operator error and learning curve, and I don't want to give too much away until I decide what's me and what's not. But the article is going to be interesting. It's going to be good. It's going to be fair, but it's not all just, you know, fanboy, rah-rah. There are some things to talk about there. So that should be an interesting read if you like that sort of thing.
And living with the technology, I mean, you can certainly have a different feel for it than, you know, us on the floor in San Diego getting a quick sound bite or just a prepared demo. So living with the unit can totally change your mind on how you approach those kinds of things. That's interesting. I know this was talked about last week, but I'm going to mention it very briefly here. The IRA controversy, in which Horizon signups went up live, and then it was kind of a timed thing where people, you know, kind of like Ticketmaster, the first 200 tickets, you know, get in line. And there were some issues that were going on with that, with accessibility, and a lot of people came out of the woodwork to make both positive and negative comments about the process. This has been a seesaw year for this company. I think it's been very interesting to see what happened since, you know, we spoke about it back in January at the end of year for, big stories of 2017. Then shortly after that, there was all the fun that came around with Greg going to the Super Bowl, when some people had interesting experiences there too. Notice I use the word interesting. Interesting is the government default word, by the way, of me trying not to put too much emphasis one way or the other. That's why I use interesting a lot, is because I'm not trying to say positive or negative things about a story. What I will say, though, is reading back, because I was offline, I was teaching a course, reading back through my timeline, man, the vitriol was just way too high on this. I mean, like, people yell at me when I do Apple comments, you know, during WWDC, Joe, you're being too sarcastic, rah, rah, rah. You know, I usually am not mean-spirited. These were just vengeance tweets, and I kind of thought that was a little over the top. And just crazy. We've been through some social media scandals in our time. Mr. Balls.
It really is. I mean, it's like the same when it's on social media. It's like people just decide, hey, I don't have to use any manners. I don't have to have any decorum at all. I can just spew out whatever feels good at the moment. And then, of course, then you think about it and you realize, okay, maybe I was a little wrong. Well, guess what? It's a little late at that point. You can't take that back.
It's kind of out there.
Yeah.
And civil discourse is certainly something we don't have a lot of in our current political climate and some places as well. Yeah. But I think in assistive technology, I mean, okay, I don't always agree with Freedom Scientific. But I don't, and I've been no stranger to saying that I'm not a fan of Zoom text changes and things that have come in 11 or, you know, adopting the ILM licensing scheme. I said that 2 weeks ago. I'm not wild about it, but I'm not carrying a torch, you know, to go after Scott Moore and Eric Damery. I think that's a little crazy. I think there's better ways to approach. And what I said on Twitter, as I told Jamie coming in, Apple built Apple Park, the most accessible building ever created. That sighted people then walk into windows that look like doors. They think they're open doors and they're windows, and people get to call 911 and send Apple employees to the hospital because sighted people are walking into big glass doors. Wow. Even Apple makes mistakes. And so I think it's a bit much for people to go crazy on this level about how or why this company did something wrong. When there are better and bigger fights to have, or at least debates, not fights. I don't want to egg that on, but debates. So very interesting, weird week. And notice I used interesting again. I'm coming back to my neutral stance there, Jamie.
Right. Good work there.
good plan. Okay.
Yes. Cool.
Anything else in the news that was exciting or wonderful in your opinion? Anything? It's kind of dry, wasn't it?
It was kind of a slow one. Yeah.
JJ and Shelley had Pinterest, so
they did. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm actually going to review Pinterest for Access World. I have not yet signed up, but it's going to happen. My wife is
going to go through the process and the whole nine
yards. Oh my word, yes! My wife's a huge Pinterest fan, so it's going to be interesting because I will have the sighted person's perspective. I can say, hey, what should I be experiencing? I'm going to start with the iPhone app. I've decided to just go that route. I'll look at it on all platforms, but I'm going to sign up using the app. So I will have her to bounce things off.
Lee into doing a diary of it. Just did like a diary style article.
Yes. It's a thought. Anna Dresner does that so well. I don't know if I can follow in those footsteps, but I could think about that.
Day four, took sledgehammer to iPhone.
Replaced
paying attention
iPhone.
To WWC. Yeah, exactly. Looking at the new iPhone this year. Needed reason. Now have tax reason to do so. That would be awesome. I updated my Windows box. So my Windows box that I use for most work is now on Redstone 5 or Windows Next. And I'm on the new Xbox Alpha build. Briefly, by the way, Xbox pushed publicly their new update to actually have a key labeling thing. So you can actually learn what buttons do what in Narrator now, which is kind of nice. So you can turn that on and know what is a trigger button and what is a bumper button. And that was kind of nice. And they've also added the ability to raise and lower the volume independently from games. So you don't have to have it at 100%. And that can be really helpful when playing some games, because if they have a quiet passage and you've turned up your TV and then you get Narrator, you know, blowing out of your speakers or headphones, you can actually go in, turn that down, set it to 50 or 70% so it's not as loud. So that went live as well. Hadn't had a chance to talk about it, but now there we go. Got a perfect opportunity. And speaking of Microsoft, we're going to come back and talk about that and Google I/O. And then maybe JJ will have some audio. If JJ doesn't have any audio, then Joe will be kerfuffled and kind of perplexed. And then maybe something
Joe
will happen.
Speechless? No, Joe won't be speechless.
Oh, that rarely happens. Very, very rarely. And then we'll have last word, short sound off, and a whole lot more coming up in a bit right after this word from Ira.
Greg, thank you for calling Ira. This is Rebecca. How can I help you?
Hey, Rebecca. I am doing a demonstration for the Blind Bargains podcast. And what I wanted to demonstrate today is our ability with Ira to be able to take a picture and then have our agents like yourself be able to provide a description right in the photo itself, so that when it comes to my app, I'll be able to actually read what you put into that description. So in front of me, I've got a document that came with my credit card, and all I'm looking for on this is the customer service phone number, and I'm wondering if you can snap a picture of this and then just tag it with the customer service phone number so I'll always have that.
Sure. All right, let's see. That's perfect. And snapping. All right, got that photo. So let's see, I'll just zoom in here and name that.
AM.
And with me, I have my iPhone, so I'm just going to, once you send that, I'll log into my iPhone, and I should be able to find that photo right into my my Aira app. I'm currently using the Horizon glasses, so talking to you on that.
All right.
Aira.
Right. And did you get it sent?
That, and
perfect.
It is on its way to your phone now?
One new item. Aira, now. Nice. One photo has been shared with you. Click to view.
Okay, perfect. So it says one photo has been shared with me, so I'm going to open the Aira app. It says one new item, so I'm just going to open that up. And to find my photos, I'm just going to go to the More tab.
More tab. Four.
I'm going to double tap on that.
More. Heading.
I'll go into the Photos section.
Inbox. Heading. Photos. Button.
And double tap on that.
Photos. More. Back button.
And the first photo should be what you just tagged.
Credit card phone number 866-553-3481. No description available. Today,
and 11-12. Beautiful. So what it says is she put, it looks like, Rebecca, you put everything in the title, which is fantastic. It just says the credit card number, or the credit card, what it is, and then it also says the actual phone number there. And then because it's nothing lengthy, you didn't need to put anything in the description. So we are all squared away. Anytime I need to refer back to that that phone number, I'll have it right in the photo section. If I ever want to delete something, I have here on my end, I can swipe up or down.
Share. Delete.
I can either share or delete that photo. Or I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Rebecca, but you also have the ability on your end at the request of the user to be able to delete those photos now as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. And in fact, all your any photo we take will be deleted in 24 hours unless you ask us to save it for you.
Awesome. All right. Well, perfect, Rebecca. I thank you so much for the help, and we will talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, how's it going? This is JJ from Google I.O. in beautiful Mountain View, California. I'm in one of the stages that has been built, constructed just for this event. It's normally a parking lot, but they built all these stages for the different talks and sessions that go on. So we were at quite a few of these, including the What's New in Android Accessibility talk, where we learned about the Lookout app. It's a new app that you can use to identify objects, barcodes, text, and much more. Really cool. It's a little bit different from what we've seen in the past. I talked to Patrick Clary about the Lookout app, and we will have that on next week's podcast. So definitely stay tuned for that. Some other really cool news for Android and accessibility, some improvements to Android P, including fixing the volume up and down gesture for accessibility. Now you can only hold it down for 1 second instead of three, a big change. It's a small change, but a big change, if you know what I mean. Also, a really cool thing for developers that's going to reap a lot of benefits for users when they submit apps to Google Play. You will get a report right away that says, hey, this app is not accessible. You need to fix these buttons or do this. And they will actually be alerted to this front and center right before they submit their apps to Google Play. So lots of cool stuff here. I'm at a machine learning session. I'm about to take in some of that because machine learning is being used to do so many things, from object recognition and face recognition to providing more information about your surroundings. It has a lot of potential for us as accessibility is concerned. So really excited to play with that. Of course, lots of stuff about the Google Assistant, Android things, Android Wear. I was playing with some watches a little bit earlier on. And yes, a lot of progress is being made in that regard as well. So definitely stay tuned. Come back next week. Thanks so much, Joe and Jamie, for doing the show this week. We'll be back next week to talk a lot more about Google I.O. and the other happenings in access technology. Reporting from Mountain View, California, this is JJ Meadow for the Blind Bargains Cast.
You're listening to the Blind Bargains Cast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Blind Bargains Cast 144. I was reminded by Patrick because I honestly mislabeled and misnumbered my files.
Isn't for not being handy to have around?
I know. Every podcast should have a Patrick. If you're thinking about doing a podcast, talk to Patrick. He's a good person for that kind of thing. Always needs work.
Your very own portable Patrick.
Ooh. Hey, we used to have portable Patrick on Team Talk.
We did, actually.
It's kind of funny Patrick. You bring that up. The Microsoft Build Conference in 2018 was a very laid-back, low-key affair. And oddly enough, it was no people in blimps or no crazy laptops with strange hinges being pushed in ways that, you know, look like a broken arm, like it shouldn't go that way. But they definitely had some interesting things to talk about. And I'm not using interesting here in the very conservative way that I usually use interesting. No, some actually fascinating stuff that happened at Build. But it was long and dry. And I don't advise that if you don't really have a hankering to learn about Azure cloud services or how things work with linkature with Bash, you probably shouldn't watch it. Just letting you know, we'll go over some of the highlights here. Number one being that there was a lot of artificial intelligence being shown and on display. And that leads us into our biggest story coming out of the event. So I don't bury the lead. AI for accessibility. This was at the end of the event, but it actually had been tweeted by Microsoft Accessibility prior to the event. So I was wondering where this fit in. So I knew it was coming 2 hours in. There it was. But Satya Nadella is very impassioned about accessibility and believes that, you know, the inclusion of all people, of no matter who they are or if they have a disability, is just pervasive in the Microsoft culture. And he spoke about that. He's spoken about it in his book and how much it means to him. Therefore, Microsoft is going to pledge over 5 years, $25 million, about $5 million a year, in grants to help deliver more assistive technology and artificial intelligence into Microsoft products, which I think is just commendable and amazing, because we already have some amazing products already, as noted in this video.
Text appears. We believe technology can empower everyone to achieve more. A man uses a wheelchair equipped with a computer.
We have so many people who are nonverbal, but still have so much to say.
A young man signs.
I want the exact same information that my hearing friends have.
On a smartphone, speech to translated text.
There are barriers to communication everywhere, but I think it's time we look at the barriers as opportunities.
A group wearing t-shirts, ability, imagine, build, enable.
To reach out to everyone.
And we're seeing this come to life. A woman with headset and a guide dog, Soundscape.
Soundscape fills in a lot of the mental map as you move.
Approaching intersection.
You can just put it in your pocket and go.
A man uses a wheelchair and computer, eye control.
With ALS, you become locked in. But we see technology as a way to give back what ALS has taken away.
Touching icons on a tablet computer, swift key symbols, Katie Strzok.
There's no better feeling than to hear a child say something that they've wanted to say and the look on their face after they've been able to say it.
A teacher and student, learning tools.
When it's reading, I see spaces between the words.
And it's easy to focus on.
Anjay realized that here was something that could change his life.
AI is opening the door to a new wave of possibilities. A lecture hall, Joseph Adjei, Microsoft Translator.
Now that I have my phone, I can see exactly what was said, and that's been a huge help to me.
The system is learning as it goes, and the accuracy has improved tremendously.
Gary Ben.
Students can pick any language that they choose to receive the information. It's like we jumped into the future.
Amanda Bui.
Because communication is very important for all of us, and we just want to be together and not feel left out.
A man with dowels in round slots. Help Picto. Gary Bantoulon. To help autistic individuals communicate, we use images. Arthur's mother. I say something to Arthur, and the Help Picto app converts this instantly into pictograms and then repeats it as a voice command. Go get dressed and brush your teeth. We can go back to having a more spontaneous communication. I think it really helps build relationships. A family portrait, seeing AI, Eric Bridges.
Both my wife and I are totally blind, and we have a 3-year-old son that's in preschool. He can see, but his parents can't. So to be able to know what's going on at his school is everything. The Seeing AI app has the ability to allow me access to the visual world. Artificial intelligence is beginning to have an impact on the lives of people with disabilities, but it's only going to grow. There is still so much out there to be done.
And we are just getting started. Let's see what you can do. AI for accessibility. Microsoft. Microsoft.com/AI for accessibility.
Jamie, I use Seeing AI almost daily, and I'm starting to use soundscapes more, which was, you know, well represented in that video just a moment ago. Has your thoughts changed over the years about how you perceive Microsoft and all the things that they've done with Narrator and logging in and providing Braille support? I mean, all that's within a year.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with the work that Microsoft is doing. I use Narrator quite a bit. I'm kind of like JJ was on last week's podcast. It's not my primary screen reader, but I definitely have that hotkey. Obviously, it's handy because it's built into Windows, but figuratively speaking, have that handy because I do. I will pop up Narrator every once in a while if there's a Windows thing that I want to do, and I feel like it's really good at that. Plus, I'm just fascinated with the work that they're doing. They're just putting a lot of work into the screen reader. It's very usable. In past Access World articles I've written about it, the commands are a little different, and so it takes a little bit of getting used to, but at the same time, there are ways to map those keystrokes, and there are more traditional commands I've noticed that seem to be coming along all the time as well. So I think it's becoming more and more familiar, more and more comfortable to me as a screen reader.
One of the things I said to the counselors last week is that for professionally blind individuals, you are almost required to know two operating systems, at least. You know, it's almost like a second language option in that many people are using an iPhone but still live in Windows for work. And, you know, some people live in NVDA and occasionally use JAWS. I think we're seeing very slowly that you're going to have to add that third, you know, screen reader in there. I think Narrator is becoming more and more ubiquitous, or in some cases, if Narrator becomes just as powerful as NVDA, let's not even compare it to JAWS. If it's just as powerful as NVDA or operating in a very high level, you're going to see businesses adopt that very quickly, because just like VoiceOver for Mac, it's built in and it's a free option. And there's the Microsoft, you know, answer desk for accessibility. There's a lot of attractive things for the enterprise with Narrator and Magnifier as well. And as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, eye gazing for people who are physically disabled and have no motor control or can't operate a keyboard in a traditional sense, dictation in Word, you know, in Office 2016, and also being improved in Office 365 for the upcoming Office 2019, which was announced a couple of weeks ago. There's just all sorts of things. And that's not even hearing AI, where you've got auto captioning. And that leads me to this next story here that we have in the show notes about the AI cone. They demonstrated that you could actually have real-time translation in chat for those who are hard of hearing, so they can follow along, and it would delineate who that person was. So you actually had an idea of, you know, Joe said the following, then Jamie said the following, and it was happening in real time in Skype Teams, which is incredible. They did a demonstration with someone from China where they were doing this real-time talk and translation back and forth. They were actually doing this in game chat for Microsoft Xbox as far back as October. This is where it first kind of debuted that I was aware of, that those who were deaf and playing games could have this real-time translation of what other people were saying in the team, so they knew how to perform in the game with their teammates. And now they've brought it over, and it's working in a business situation, which I think is just crazy, especially if you have someone with a foreign language or someone who's deaf on the team. Or you just want to be able to read that back at Braille. Oh, my gosh.
Right. You know, as a blind person, I think it's easy for me, I'll just speak for me, to think, wow, accessibility. Oh, that's all about me. Cool. And then you realize, no, actually, it really isn't. It isn't all about blind people. It's all about a lot of things. And my hat is off to accessibility teams everywhere that have a lot of stuff on their plates. My goodness. And think about the details, the nuances of many different disabilities. It's pretty amazing.
Access by committee used to be a phrase that people would cringe when they heard, you know, because it was like that meant somebody was being left out, or one disability was kind of on the sideline because, you know, I'm good at every other this, but I'm not good at that. So this is going to do better than that because this is where we excel at as a company. Microsoft has been teaming up and adding staff in a lot of areas, and they are really focusing on autism, and they are really focusing on code, and lots of parts of Microsoft that you don't think about are working all together on that kind of philosophy. So the Minecraft, being able to use Minecraft with your eyes, that's crazy, but it's another great way to show that Microsoft is understanding how people work. And a lot of the stuff that they were demonstrating was multi-platform. They mentioned iOS several times. They mentioned Android a couple of times. They mentioned a lot of things because the Microsoft launcher is on Android, so you can use Cortana in Android if you wish. And now you're going to be able to use Cortana with Alexa. One of the things that they demonstrated is that they have an open architecture and a partnership now with Google. With Amazon. With Amazon, to be able to pass that information back and forth. So they were, you know, using Cortana for some scheduling and relying that on work. Almost like you had Cortana for your work stuff and Alexa for your home stuff. And they would talk back and forth together.
That's pretty fascinating. I love just the fact that, as we've said already, I mean, you don't just speak one language anymore. You don't just use one operating system. You don't just use one assistant. You have your Google Home. You have things from Microsoft and Amazon. And the fact that these things are starting to all work together is just pretty cool, I think.
I have an article here from The Verge that talks about the six other biggest stories that came out of the Microsoft event. It was, again, a show for developers. There weren't, you know, hardware. There weren't crazy announcements. There wasn't anything too, you know, over the top. I mean, HoloLens got a moment, and they were talking about some of their AR play, which is good. A lot more about services with Azure. It's just weird to think that Microsoft didn't, how do I put this? It's not like they didn't talk about Windows, but Windows wasn't the star of the show. And it really isn't. If you look at the Microsoft stock filings and their income and their earnings, there was a lot of talk of the other services that are making tons of money, like Office 365 or Azure and even Bing. And they even said that there are like four core portions of the Microsoft ethos, and some of those would be talked about at another time, meaning Xbox, which will probably get its day at E3 next month because there's an event already scheduled. So those who thought they're going to spin off the gaming division, I think you're sadly misinformed, because that didn't look like it. It was all pretty tight and integrated, and all the major players at Microsoft got a mention. So that will be interesting going forward on how Microsoft begins to bring that stuff beyond just conversations and cloud. But it's all, like I was telling Jamie before we recorded, it's not pretty. It's freight train, right? It's not a bullet train that goes from 0 to 200. It's your typical locomotive pulling boxcars, which is boring. But inside those boxcars are amazing things that you don't really realize how they got to you because they came in on that train, but that's not fascinating at all. Google, on the other hand, was loud and flamboyant. So if you thought that Microsoft was a little bit quieter in tone, they were. Their videos were very, not muted, but it was like I was telling Jamie, there were like lighter music in the background and their messages were more on point and they were shorter. Oh my goodness. The videos were just like over and done with. You didn't have to worry about how long is this going on? When will this end? And many of them have audio description. So if you go to the show notes, I'll have the one that you heard earlier, a link directly to it. The Google stuff was cartoony and loud and big music and full of celebrities, and somewhere between, say, Microsoft and Apple, that's where Google fell this year, was just kind of wild kind of ride. And you listened to this keynote. It wasn't WWZZZ, but it wasn't too far away from that, was it?
No, it really wasn't. Of course, I kind of had the benefit of some commentary. I did listen to Twit. So those guys have they do a good job of talking over stuff when they need to, and
yeah, they're kind of keep things a bit less more interesting, pushy, and was more descriptive, I thought, this year.
Yeah, I think they've really been better about that in the last few years that I've watched things. That I think they are maybe a bit more aware, maybe not so much of their blind audience, but certainly of their listening audience, because a couple of times Leo said, for those of you who are listening, so he is aware that not everyone is getting visual cues. Well, that's nice.
And describing people's clothing, which was, I think, helpful. He was a little catty.
was wearing what today?
I thought that was funny. But so was Andy Inako on Twitter, too, because I was kind of reading Andy while listening to Twit. The turtleneck and the zipped-up jacket, as Leo noted, certainly, I would say, Silicon Valley chic, what you would expect at the event. Kind of right down the middle, Sundar Pichai came out, and he always... I don't want to use declaratives, but he almost always feels uncomfortable, like in the beginning. There's always this, he's got to build into it run, you know?
Yeah.
Where I thought Satya Nadella was doing a TED Talk during Microsoft, because he talked about the cloud and responsibility and information. And of course, that's coming right out of the lawsuit that they've had that went all the way to the Supreme Court about where information is stored and can the government get it. You know, you've got Sundar, who's also under the shadow of being lumped in with Facebook on how they treat data, although I think they're far different approaches. I think Google's overly transparent to a point. And you can go and delete anything, anytime, any place, anywhere, whereas until recently, good luck finding how you did that in Facebook.
Right.
But both talked very much about responsibility and providing power back to the user. And that was clearly evident in some of the things that was being said from Google. One of the first things that they kind of got into was accessibility, where Microsoft placed it at the end and was very respectful to it. In fact, it was more empowering than inspiration porny. The Google approach was almost indifference in a way. It was almost just laissez-faire, like, oh yeah, we're doing stuff and we're proud of it, but they weren't in your face about it, which is also different than the way that Apple does it, which is always sympathetic marketing. And I did another declarative. Doggone it. But it's true in that case. I'm going to stand by that one. Gboard is Google's keyboard alternative that you can use in iOS, or of course, you can also use it within Android. They are adding to their accessibility lineup the ability to use Morse code for those individuals who use switches or have the need for alternative communication and need voice for themselves. Mm-hmm. And as much as we talk about Braille screen input and how important that is for iOS for some people, Morse code, especially for those ham operators out there, this could be even faster to do input for some people. And I thought that was really neat that it was at the beginning of the conference.
It was. It was a great story, too, about the lady that, you know, that needed the Morse code and the man that she ended up marrying. I guess they worked on it together and made it available, if I have that story
Developers.
But yeah.
That's
awesome. Yeah. I guess that's an example of taking something that you need and making it available for other people, which we see a lot in our industry. That's a great thing.
Funny you say that, because right after that is Be My Eyes won for Best Access. We had talked about that. They and Audio Game Hub and some other apps were up for the Google Play Awards. And Be My Eyes, who, as JJ reminded me, came out in October of last year for Android, took top spot. So in just a matter of months, you've had Microsoft recognize Be My Eyes and tie them to the Disability Answer Desk. And here's Google rewarding them for the ability to be one of the best access apps of, you know, last year, which I think is great. They just received their award at Google I.O. So that is commendable and I think really a fascinating thing for people who wonder, you know, about the parity. We've talked about this before, about what would it take? You know, what makes you more comfortable to go back and forth from Android to iOS? And, you know, for some people, it's the same apps I use. And, you know, JJ and I talked about this not too long ago. You've got Canopy, you've got Bard, now you have Be My Eyes, you've got Voice Dream. You just need Seeing AI, and man, oh man, I think you're just about there.
Yeah.
Except for Braille screen input, I know people are about to fire up their email or tweets and send them right at me. Yes. Braille screen input and Braille back. I don't disagree. That didn't come up while they were talking about Android P. What did come up is that some people were noticing that they were doing iPhone X like gestures with Android P. No name for P yet.
Right.
Want to make a sweet suggestion for P?
Oh,
praline.
P. That works. That's good. That works. I kind of like that one.
Praline.
Yeah, that works.
Peanut butter cup. That would be good. I'd like peanut butter
that'd
cup.
That'd be good, too.
Yeah. Or maybe they'll just save that for R. That'd be good.
Pastry? Can you just do pastry?
Yeah. Puff pastry, I think I jokingly puff said pastry. Once.
Okay.
Would work out really well. Yeah. So send your suggestions at Blind Bargains or feedback at Blind Bargains for the P word. We had kind of gotten this feeling, and I think we said it on the CSUN wrap-up show, that Oreo is just going to be one of those kind of iterative Android letter slash number combinations, because a lot of things were just moving right along to P, and this seemed the same way. Like, there wasn't a talk about adoption. There wasn't any really talk about numbers this year.
No.
There was just straight on into what they were going to do. Now, they did say that they were doing extremely well with Google Assistant, and they mentioned a couple of numbers, which I thought was interesting, on more than 500 million devices.
Yeah.
That I assume are not Android phones, because if you think about it, Google Assistant is on just about every Android phone, so that number's higher. But I would imagine they're talking about Google Assistant devices like Chromecast and Google Home. They also mentioned six as in the new voices. There are six new voices that are coming to Google Assistant, including musician John Legend for some contextual things. And they had a video of him in the recording studio. They actually talked about several ways that they approached the recording. And I didn't know this. So the code name for the original Google Assistant voice was Holly.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they're science fiction fans, so I wonder if Holly was kind of a recognize of Red Dwarf, because that was the name of the computer AI in Red Dwarf was Holly.
Okay. All right.
You know, so they do a lot of Star Trek and Star Wars kind of nods in Google terminology from time to time. In fact, ages ago, you and I did a podcast where one of the Google AI voices was codenamed Majel, as in Majel Barrett Roddenberry, who was the voice of the computer in Star Trek for a very long time. So six new voices, those are rolling out really, really soon.
Hey, it's your Google Assistant.
And now you can choose from different voices for me to speak with.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Let us know how we can help.
It's so great to meet the rest of you.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Thanks for having us on.
A controversial feature, which I want to get your opinion on, is Google Duplex. You could really use Google as an assistant to make calls for you. And the demonstration that they had done was an AI that would go and make a dinner reservation for you.
That was almost creepy. It was.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I'd like to reserve a table for Friday the 3rd.
Okay, hold on one moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hold on one second. Mm-hmm. So Friday, November 3rd. How many people?
For two people.
Two people?
Yeah.
What time?
At 5 p.m.
Okay. And your name?
The first name is Daniel. That's D-A-N-I-E-L.
Okay. You're all set.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We'll see you next Friday. Okay, thank you. Bye.
It's like a robocall in reverse.
Exactly. That could be a good thing. That could go wrong. I mean, you could get calls that you don't want. If someone takes that and uses that in ways that you really think you're talking to a person and you start interacting and then you end up getting yourself into a situation that you didn't really want to be in. Right now, it's pretty obvious if you're getting a robocall. It's pretty obvious if you're getting an automated recorded message.
Especially if it's, hi, out of context, voice.
Yes.
And down.
Yes. Right. Exactly. I agree with one of the, and it may have been Leo, it may have been someone else on the Twit coverage that said they really do need to say this is an automated call at the beginning of a call like that.
Sure. If you were doing a deaf relay, you were working with someone in relay calls, you know, the relayer announces that at the beginning, hi, I'm a relay operator. We'll be working today with someone who's deaf. Are you ready to take the call? And we'll explain all that, how it goes in the very, very beginning.
Right.
And that would be helpful because you're right. It is, you know, the robocall in reverse where you know, this is doing the work for you, which is efficiency, which is what Google likes to say that it does.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm the same way about Gmail auto-completing things.
And yeah.
I didn't send the email. Gmail sent the email. Well, yeah, wait till that gets to court is the first thing I think about. And
yeah.
I didn't do it, Your Honor. Gmail did it. I don't know. This is just so weird. And making calls for you just seems like a little bit too weird for me. I mean, it is the true definition of a quote unquote assistant, but weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It may take off. That may be just them testing the water and see how it goes. A lot of people didn't like them scanning emails until they felt comfortable with it and that it was providing a value.
Right.
But for a business, and they were trying to pitch it to small businesses, you know.
Yeah.
Then you're talking about one computer talking to another because, you know, it's just going to be for reservations, call this line. So their bot will talk to your bot. And then the next thing you know, you've spent $3,000 on lobster. Who knows? It just
yes.
Very, very, very strange. They also announced conversations with the ability to not have to say the trigger word for Google devices, something that came to Amazon a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
But they went one step further. They demonstrated that you would be able to continue the conversation, but you could do it contextually. And so one of the examples that they did was they had asked a question about who was governor at the time that a basketball player was drafted. So the, you know, there were two pieces of the actual question. So Google had to contextualize both of those in the same phrase after the initial question had been asked initially. So that was like a three-part question broken into two parts, and it did it. And of course that's a demo, but that says a lot about what Google can do transactionally, you know, which is learn more about you, kind of get an idea to prepare itself for what you might ask or keep some of those interests for you, where Amazon seems to be very one-on-one, you know, the question leads to an answer and then you have a follow-up. But you're literally like starting another question. It's just not triggering the word anymore to get her to do things.
Right. I think of the entire hour and 50 minute presentation keynote, that was probably some of the most interesting for me, was to listen to that. And as you say, that was a demo, but just to listen to the possibilities there and to know how you could really, I mean, if you're, especially if you're writing with someone and you're, because often I will get directions. My wife's driving. I'm taking care of navigating, which is kind of cool. But to be able to get information, maybe even make a phone call or make a reservation. I mean, there are lots of things that you could do with that quickly. And sometimes quickly is the key. You need to get information in a hurry.
Agreed.
So, yeah, some really interesting stuff there.
Well, it's nice that there are comparatives. Amazon is definitely trying to take their voice assistant, which was a huge win for them, into places where they think they can jump ahead of Google and that they may have a head start in how they've reached home adoption.
Right.
But they recognize that there's room for two assistants. I mean, we just spoke a moment ago about Cortana and Alexa existing and being friends in Windows. In their mind, you might have an iOS device and a Windows machine. You know, they recognize that you're not going to live just in one ecosystem, even though you might want to. The only person in the room who wants you to stay within an ecosystem is Siri.
So we'll
hear about what she has next month at WWDC, but it is getting harder and harder to even compare Siri to these other two devices. I mean, these other two assistants, sorry.
Right.
It's just crazy.
It really is.
How fast things are going.
Agreed.
And there was even a small nod to that in the privacy conversation, the moral thought leader thing going on, where they acknowledged that they have all this information and it is very powerful. But here's a bunch of controls. And if you don't want a bunch of controls, here's a bunch of smaller settings of controls that will let you do this even, you know, on a micro level. And that would be the ability to add please and thank you to the assistant for children so they learn manners, or the ability to set limits on how much YouTube you consume, or
yeah,
the ability for the phone to start dimming itself, making itself lose color, or put itself in a do not disturb state where you had just a white list of people who could contact you. So you're not constantly being bombarded with this message or that message or this email or that email. You know, it slowly immerses you into the warm bathwater before you go to bed. So you're not constantly jumping at every little notification or that feel that pressure to oh, I got to be involved. I might miss something. For our 15-year-old, oh, dude, are we using this stuff? Because
yeah,
that's him.
Right.
He is totally, totally the cat-like reflexes. If the screen lights up for something, you know, he'll set it to vibrate and ignore the vibration. But if the screen lights up, you know, he's very visual. He's on it like a duck on a June bug. So the YouTube especially.
Yeah. I actually know of a family that when they talk to their device, they kind of yell at it. And it literally kind of got my attention. It's like, wow, they sound like they're hateful. And I've deliberately tried to be careful not to do that. Not that Echo cares much one way or the other, but the people around me might. And I think this saying please and thank you thing, although it sounds kind of ridiculous on the surface, it's like, well, that's stupid. Why would you need to, you know? But there may actually be something to it, and it's probably a sad commentary on where we are with our devices, or maybe not so sad. Maybe it's just where we are, where we've kind of evolved, and we have to just actually deal with these things. The fact that you don't have to scream at your device, at your assistant, more for the respect of the people around you than anything else, but to learn how to just talk normally to our devices.
Reminds me of when I used to do headphone demos at Incredible Universe, or, you know, I'd have someone listen to a record real, oh, you got to hear this song, you know. Yeah, it's really great. I really like it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very much that way where you don't recognize that you can speak normally and I can still hear you. No, we're totally fine.
You don't see it as much with cell phones, but man, in the day, people on cell phones used to scream. Oh, it was horrible.
There was a show called Trigger Happy TV in the UK, and this guy would make fun of that, where he would be in a museum or a park or somewhere very quiet, and then he would get the Nokia ring, the...
Yes.
And then he would answer, and he'd be like, ah! Rah! It's all rubbish! You know, and just...
Yeah.
And just screaming, having this loud conversation, and they would record like candid camera the reactions of people around him, and it was just hysterical. And those were just great videos because it demonstrates exactly that. And there were a lot of counselors last week talking about the SNL skit with Amazon Echo Silver, which we've talked about on the show. It's been a last word. And the way that people would approach that, whether they were young or old, it felt like they had to yell at it. But yeah, I for some reason, they break into international handicap speak is what I call it, where they speak really loud and really slow and then gesticulate their hands like they're trying to do mock sign language. And then, you know, would you like something to drink? And then pantomime drinking, you know. So
yeah,
I used to run into that with airline attendants ages ago. But I think, again, it's just something about technology that people have trouble with. And that's why I think we're going to see an adoption of these smart screens. So the other thing that Amazon had done to advance the conversation between Echo and Google Assistant was to bring on the Echo Show, which was the Echo with the little monitor on it that could show you things that you could buy, because they've done studies and, you know, visual people like visual things. Therefore, here comes some smart screens, and doggone it, if they're not coming on over to Google Assistant, they showed off several smart screens, and as they would ask questions, a visual indicator would come up with a yes or no button to click, or there would be other things that you could do, like dinner reservations, and it would show you a grid, and the voice assistant wouldn't speak anymore. You could see that, Jamie. It's right there. I wonder if we'll see a fork moving forward, right? Are we going to see both interfaces be persistent, or will we start to gravitate into the touch screen click here for more philosophy, which is something I had said years ago, if you remember, was going to happen as soon as we could put screens on it. There we go, voice assistant.
Right.
And Google Lens was demonstrated as well for scanning things into Google Maps. So if you looked at a menu, you could scan that and learn everything about it with ingredients, if, you know, especially if the business, you know, links it to their own website, but it would know that you're at IHOP and it could give you more information about the ingredients and calories if it wasn't directly listed there. It could do searches for recipes like what you're seeing for chocolate chip pancakes or what have you. So that was a real-time OCR benefit for people. And I got one more for you. Okay. Google Maps then had an augmented reality thing. So they used AR, yeah, but really, really, really what it was is Google Street View tied to Google, yeah, Maps with little visual indicators to let people know whether they should go left or right when they come out of the subway. Kind of, mm-hmm, like what Microsoft Soundscapes is doing, where you could have auditory cues to give you breadcrumbs or lead you. Google is going to do visually with all the map data that they have from Google Earth and Street View, and allow people this augmented reality way to navigate like what Jamie's talking about, which still works for you because Stacy doesn't need to look at the phone while you're driving. That's bad.
Right. Right. Yes.
You're still navigator. You're still safe.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's just, you know, to think about, the importing of information, the inclusion of information, kind of all in one spot. Of course, there's always, you know, how accessible is it going to be? Can we get to it easily? But looking at menus, looking at information, getting the auditory cues, getting the directions, theoretically, the more of that we can do in one spot, the better off, I think.
I will say that a lot of that stuff has been coming over to iOS, especially in Google Maps. I use Google Maps constantly because,
yeah,
there are reviews from people who might be fond of accessibility and might mention a layout or the color scheme of a place before I go into it. Or, you know, there's questions, can it be easily seen from a car or things like that? Because you can fill out as a Google local guide, you can fill those questions out that Google will ask you. Can this be seen from a car? Is it easily spotted? Is there wheelchair accessibility? Is there a unisex bathroom? All those questions you can actually be asked as a guide that goes into Google Maps, and that information is then transparent to those who aren't guides. They're for everybody. But it's a great way to get a quick idea of, you know, what I'm walking into, or even the menu information is there. So I was in Starkville near the campus of MSU, and there was a Ruby Tuesdays there. I used Google Maps to verify that I was 351 like feet away, because it was like right next to the hotel of Holiday Inn. The parking lots were adjoining. And not only that, I could get the information about what food was at Ruby Tuesdays, but not from the official Google app. So if you went in and you looked through the, you know, Google Maps, it only gave you a couple of things, but then it has a link in there that takes you to the website for the menu for online ordering. And I could read everything from that. And you can even set that to open in Safari now in iOS. So some people think that Google doesn't always work out because I can't use TalkBack. No, there are a lot of great things that I use in iOS with Google all the time. So a lot of, right, those things might not necessarily be fun to use in Android land, but they tend to work fairly well in iOS land because I do it all the time with Google Cast or YouTube TV or what have you. So, sure, a lot of cross-pollinization happening there, which, yeah, I think is super cool. Other than that, it was really kind of quiet. JJ, I'm sure, will be able to tell us a lot more from Google I/O when he returns. But any other thoughts about the big event at Google Land? There was nobody jumping out of blimps. There was
nobody jumping out of
round
blimps,
devices that played music out of them.
Right. It seems like I say this a lot, but I think moving forward, I'm always looking ahead. It's like, okay, there may not have been anything super exciting this time, but next time when we see something else come out, it's kind of like you said earlier, we're going to be able to say, oh, now I get it. Now I see, yeah, how those two things go together.
Yeah. They were kind of teasing it there, like, uh-huh, you know, progressive web apps.
Yeah.
Or universal Windows apps. You know, they're kind of the same thing, but, you know, they demonstrated this thing in Android P where you could actually see a widget within the app. So if you were going to say, if you did Lyft a whole bunch, you could type in Lyft and it would give you kind of a preview of the app and even give you a quick shot without having to open the app that there would be a car within 5 minutes, and you could then click on it and then go into the app directly. But it was kind of just a little snapshot of what the app was doing. That's not something that we have any idea of whether that's going to read with TalkBack or what have you yet. But Google's looking at it from the idea that they could make these APIs open, these protocols open, for other apps to use them. And therefore, if I'm using an iOS device, I'm not using Google all the time. I can't make it a default, but other apps, right, could. And then if you were in them, it could be, oh, let's say nearby explorer. Just hypothetically, I'm not going to put APH on the hot plate here, but just as a hypothetical, nearby explorer, then through what they're doing, click a button that would automatically kind of sort of give you an idea of how far away Lyft was, and would you like to go ahead and click on that to go into the Lyft app. But this is how long it would take. Here's a price estimate from where you are to there. With not having to launch Lyft, you could get an idea of how much it is in real time without having to open up another app. And then if you wanted to, then you would use that service. But nearby would tell you, hypothetically, again, that it's going to be 25 minutes and it's going to cost you a lot of money to go to the airport, you know? And that's what we're looking at. Google knows that they can't get on the system level of Apple, but there's a lot of users there. So how do they make that easily available for other people to utilize those services? Now, mind you, Google gets like money every time there's 100,000 API calls. So there is some, there's not altruism there. There is a actual reason for them to do this and charge people money for using Google Maps data. But still, for the user who wants that, for the user who's looking for that, for the user who's familiar with those services or stays in those ecosystems or lives in Apple land and wants to still have a foot in Google world, you still have those opportunities. And I think that was interesting because developers are a finite resource. And what Apple has even done itself is say that Swift is an open language, because who wants to rewrite the same app for three different operating systems? They're making it much easier so you can carry that stuff across, because everybody, including Amazon, Google, and Microsoft all have been demonstrating that they recognize that you're not going to live just in Windows or just in voice view on a Fire tablet.
Right.
So no big devices. That's probably going to be the fall events this year. That leaves us with WWDC to see if we have any new hardware coming out. There's certainly a lot of rumors about that. New iPhones, the ability to use Face ID and landscape, which I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know you couldn't use Face ID. You only in portrait mode. Okay. But there's talk now that Face ID will work in landscape mode in upcoming iOS. So that probably means that iPads are going to get Face ID and other stuff. So will they or won't they? The SE, that's, you know, SE second generation, so or second edition, special edition.
Right.
New colors.
There you go.
Quiet event. See, you were worried. I told you, I was like, oh, Jamie, you're going to be on the same week of Microsoft and Google. It's going to be all this stuff. And was it bad?
No, not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Any final thoughts before we move on to maybe a tip?
Well, I just am a little jealous that JJ was outdoors. I mean, I guess I could have gone outside and sat, but it would have been not quite the same. He was
not had to worry about where the bathroom was and, and had all your amenities, you know?
It's a good point,
You probably had just as many birds if you listened to that audio.
There
was a lot of birds during the event.
There were.
Which I thought was kind of cool. Amphitheater, birds, California. Wow. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. We'll see if he gets any swag. There wasn't anything, mentioned for a while that was kind of started to eclipse the event. Both these events were for developers and felt that way. Yep. So it's a very interesting time for us not to worry about dirigibles and people in street teams anymore. Oh, the webs we weave in the Nexus Q. Well, we'll come right back with a tip, going to sound off, and then, of course, the last word in just a minute on Barbecue 144. Staying with the spirit that we have mentioned about ecosystems and being able to just supplement the other guy, my tip today, Jamie, is that you can kick that Google Assistant to the curb on your Android phone. You don't have to be shackled to that Google Assistant anymore. You can have Alexa right there on your Android phone. And that could be your default search.
Okay. Well, there you go. Right? I mean, hey.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
There you go.
Cortana opened up this door. Microsoft made the Microsoft launcher. So as you know, with Google, you can have different launchers to be able to do things on your Android devices. Well, you can go into settings and go down to Voice Assistant, and you can set Alexa as your default. So when you hold the home button, you will have Alexa pop up for you. All you need to do is download the Alexa app. You got to have it installed first. So if you didn't already, go ahead and go get that from the Google Play Store. Then go into settings, go down to the voice assistant and set that as your default, as you usually do with most Android customizations. And now you don't have to worry about saying that trigger word for that company that begins with a G anymore.
Right. No more.
Which is great. If you live in the Amazon ecosystem, there you go. Go out and get yourself a cheap, you know, you could probably do that. Go out and get yourself a cheap Android device and then set that as your, you know, dot or, you know, remote for Amazon devices and stuff. Probably be work really well. Maybe a little lag depending on your Wi-Fi, but there's the tip for this week.
As we record this, if I wanted to go get a not too expensive Android tablet to just learn and play, what's out there right now? It will change, but today.
I used to say NVIDIA Shield. In fact, I love the NVIDIA Shield, but it is not going past Nougat, so it's not going to get Oreo. Therefore, I said to Ricky that I will probably lean towards getting a Oreo-based device in the Google flavor, which means a phone for us to have for testing purposes, especially since I want Android P, and Google quietly committed to that, by the way, and 3 years of updates, security and otherwise again.
Okay.
That was in a story about one of the security hubs that they released prior to Google I.O. I am not comfortable recommending Samsung anymore because Samsung seems to be diverging very hard from the Android ecosystem, really trying to put the walls up. And you've heard JJ mention that on the podcast, where that's why he felt more comfortable on the Pixel 2. I don't know that I have a good tablet recommendation anymore because a lot of them are cheaply made. A lot of them are using very low memory, especially for the cost that they are. And a lot of them don't have a whole heck of a lot of upgrade path. So I would say look at Android Central or Android Police, read something like, you know, the new LG 10 or something like that that's coming out and see if that meets your needs. But look to see if there's something in the article about an upgrade path, because I just don't feel comfortable with P looming in the background. And there was no real release date. The beta is available.
No. Right.
But there's no real release date for when P arrives. And P is going to be such a dramatic change to the way that Google does things. And I think that's why they kind of 8-0 at CSUN and other places. They're moving on philosophically as well as the backbone of how the Android operating system works. So I think at the moment, I don't have an answer.
Fair enough. Stay tuned for future podcasts.
Send it in. We'd love to hear it. You know how you can do that? Take a listen to this sounder right here.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
That lovely lady told you just about how to get a hold of us. So send along your Android tablet suggestions to answer Jamie's question, probably in a shorter way than Joe just did, probably more pithy as well. The one email that I wanted to feature here, because I really didn't go through all our feedback yet and had to get the show together and watch two keynotes. Jim Denham, who is a longtime listener of the show, he sends in his thoughts that kind of mirror what you were talking about as far as Windows accessibility and the out-of-the-box experience that's happening with Cortana and setting up computers for people and how much easier it has gotten with Narrator speaking during install, which was one of the new features that has come up over the last year, as well as what's coming with Braille on the login screen, which is awesome. So I think that gets lost because seeing AI is so huge right now. You know, they keep adding features to that with handwriting and light detection and color detection. And because we're, you know, mostly on our phones, you know, a lot of us are, or tablets.
Right.
It's hard to gauge what is happening in the Windows world and how amazing that is, unless you do it every day, or at least you're in those places like Windows in safe mode with speech. We lost that when we lost Windowize. Now we've got it back with Narrator.
Right.
Which is incredible. But we if we're not needing that feature, we're forgetting about it. And I happen to know because I did this little program Jamie's familiar with, you might have heard of, called Main Menu. You remember that?
I do.
Thought you might.
I do.
Yeah, I thought you might. So the narrator team has been on a couple of times, and I've been lucky enough to be involved in those podcasts. And so I have an intimate knowledge of what's been going on with Windows, because I'll mention another name, this guy, Jeff Bishop. You remember Jeff?
Oh, yeah, that guy. Microsoft guy. Yeah.
He keeps us up to date on what's going on there. And there's another guy over there we know too. Matt Campbell. Yeah, Matt's over there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a when you think right down to it, Jamie, we actually know several people over in Microsoft.
Kind of do, don't we?
Who we may have worked with or may know very well as friends. Right. So we have a tendency to know about it because it's kind of what we do. But unless you're using those features all the time, it's easy to get lost on how amazing Microsoft has been bringing these things to the table. And of course, not just on Windows, but on Xbox and Office, right. Office on iOS. Just crazy things that are happening with Office for Mac and the like. So, and OneDrive is starting to get a lot of that love too. I think it's easy when there's a giant company like this to lose just how important that stuff is. But for Jim and others who install computers for a living, this is make or break, especially if you don't have an internet connection, because maybe you have to authorize that JAWS, or maybe you forgot to bring the pen drive with NVDA on it. You're not out of the woods. And as JJ has said, he would turn it on computers with those he found on Airbnb. So that's like going into the Apple store and hitting command F5 and walking away.
Mm. Yeah.
Thanks, Jim, for sending that along. Last word. I kind of thought I would stay true to my roots. Jamie is familiar with a little show that I used to do called End of Line with Ricky.
Yes.
And I thought of you, Jamie, when I chose this one. It's about Oreos.
Yes. And, Oreos are great.
I may have famously eaten a few Oreos during my time on other podcasts with you.
Yes, yes, so I believe this is true. Mm-hmm.
I believe the words fruit and punch bring back some terrible memories for many of us, because those were very painful to eat. In fact, the hot cinnamon ones smelled like the fruit punch ones, and I almost couldn't eat them. How about Oreos in donut form?
I'm up for that. I would be willing to give that a try.
Chris's cookie and cream Oreo donut from Krispy Kreme entice you? Any there?
Man, wow. Let's go right now. We can be there. Well, I don't live very close, so that would not work for me.
I could buy some of these here in North Carolina and ship them to you, because there are many a Krispy Kreme here in North Carolina.
That's a thought.
I could make it a big dozen, so I could get you not just the Oreo ones, but Chips Ahoy donuts, Nutter Butter Twist donuts.
Oh.
These are all three donuts that are available. Thank you, Grubhub, for showing these to me. They've been having limited edition donuts during Easter. Like we were with some friends who had driven up from Gaffney, South Carolina, right before St. Patrick's Day. And we had talked about the crazy donuts. And lo and behold, when we were going through, they were green. All their glazed donuts were green for St. Patrick's Day. So we had green donuts. In the past, they've done Halloween ones. I posted those on Facebook. So they were like pumpkins and ghosts and just scary things. They had some Easter color ones that looked really nice. They had Valentine's ones as well. So Krispy Kreme has been doing some wild promotions. But this was the first time that I had seen name brand cookies being involved in donuts. So I haven't done a cronut, but I want to do the Nutter Butter ones. I mean, I've talked about Oreos a bunch, but man, Krispy Kreme, you got a choice, Oreo, Nutter Butter, Chips Ahoy, and you don't have to worry about the diabetic content of these donuts. Which one, Jamie, which one?
I would go with Oreo, but you really couldn't go wrong with any of them.
That's true. So sugar plus caffeine from their coffee equals Joe awake for 2 weeks, I would think.
Yeah.
More than
exactly.
Especially if you got like a baker's dozen of these things.
Right.
That I could eat them very quickly. But you have to, because they go stale.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Yeah. That'd be a shame. Any crazy last words you want to bring to the program here? Did you come prepared, sir? Did you do your homework?
Well, the last word for me is, man, this feels good to do this. I haven't done this for a while, this whole talk and tech thing. And I mean, I write now so I can be all precise and all weigh my words carefully and nobody gets to see the goofiness. But when I do podcasting, it's, whoops, I can't. I mean, Patrick can only do so much. He's good, but, you know, there's only so much he can do with my stream of conscious rambling thing.
With the motor mouth over here who talks and does the info dump, that's the hardest part about these shows is Joe talked too much in that episode. Well, Joe had to do a lot of info dump. And whenever Joe does that, he feels very guilty about this, especially since he just spoke for 5 hours in lectures to people who had to listen to him for their master's degrees.
So, yes, Professor Steinkamp. I love the ring of that, by the way.
Yeah, that was a very weird and yet strangely rewarding experience, but I apologize to those individuals. You know, funny about that, I recorded those at like 4 a.m, so there were like no interruptions and stuff because I wasn't sure. Patrick helped me, thank goodness, clean those up. He didn't have to do a lot, but I was still keenly aware, and it felt weird. As much as you are trying to get your sea legs back under you to do a podcast, It felt weird not to have a broadcasting partner to do the podcast. Yeah. And so therefore to keep some continuity, I hired Patrick to clean up the audio because I was kind of like very keenly aware. It doesn't sound right. Oh, I know why. Patrick didn't produce it. I don't think there's anything I've said in 8 years that Patrick hasn't produced. This feels so strange. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. That feels very weird. You know, people can find your writings where, Mr. Pauls?
They can go to afb.org/AW, AW being for Access World, but really the coolest way to get the content is to download the app for iOS. Go grab that thing. It is, I love it because it's just simple. It is what it is. It's not cumbersome. It just gives you articles and they're easy to find and read and all that good stuff. So Access World is...
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You can search for stuff. You can read back issues. It's all just right there. So Access World is the place to. You can follow me on Twitter at Jamie Pauls. I lurk on Twitter these days. I used to post a lot more than I do. Yeah,
you're not as prolific as you used to be. No, you've left that for people who talk too much, like Buddy and I.
Well, you know, you guys are awesome. I'm a little more on Facebook, so. I do accept followers on Facebook. Just look me up there as well. But that's kind of – every time I come on this show, I always say I'm going to probably do a little more social media next time. So I'll just say that again because that's my standard statement.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hold to consistency. That makes – yeah, I'm good with that. That works out a lot. JJ is the guy who's behind the Twitter feed at blindbargains.com. So if you follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/blindbargains, all one word, you'll be able to hear things like him going to Google I.O. before we announce it on the show. Or you'll find out about some of the great classified deals that we have going on. And of course, some crosstalk between myself, the other hosts that you hear, the BBQ crew, and of course, some of the information that's going to come up over at AT Guys. Don't forget that there's some amazing stuff that's going to come up. You know, convention's just 2 months away.
Yeah.
As I say that in the planning stages. And so you might hear about some of our new products that we have coming out over at atguys.com. You can also follow me to find out stuff about probably the 100, because I got to catch up on that and some of my DC shows from the CW network that are getting renewed. So you'll find out about that. Maybe even some Doctor Who. Maybe not. Who knows? But I am really, there's not been a reason for me to talk about that lately. Mostly video games, as I unpack my professorial robes and put them away over at twitter.com/Ranger Station, all one word, traditional spelling, Ranger Station, all one word. And, of course, thanks to Mr. Patrick for making us sound better than we actually are. No trains this week, indeed. So maybe he'll have to edit in one. People like the trains.
Yeah, there may have been a constant lawnmower in the background. Wasn't mine, but I kind of felt like old times. I've done that to him more than once over the years.
That is
nice
true.
Nice lawnmower, yes.
Nice leaf blowers in the background of his window. Or cats. He used to have cats. That was
cats.
A good one, too.
Cats are awesome. I had one in here. Let's see. She was pretty quiet. We'll see if anything slips in to the podcast, if listeners
he's gonna pull her tail.
Find any cat noises.
Awful. Yeah, that'd be good.
Right.
Also, thanks to Ira for sponsoring this very podcast. Remember, you can find out about Horizon and all the great things that are going on over at the website, or roll back to our sponsored audio content from season with the interview with Greg Stilson, where we talk all about what IRA is and what it will do for you. IRA.io, and of course, follow them on Twitter to keep up with other information that is available. Hopefully, if JJ survives his trip, he will be back with us for the next episode, and maybe he's bringing some audio if it didn't already land in this podcast. Then he'll be with us next week with maybe some stories to tell. And of course, we got WWZZZZ, as Scott calls it, WWDC coming up the first week of June, and E3, my favorite time of year, where all the video game companies come and tell me how much money I'm about to spend in the next 6 months. That's always a fun time. And a whole bunch of fun stuff before we get to convention. So let us know what you think about this show and others. Share it with your friends. Thank you so much for doing so. And thank you again, Mr. Pauls, for being on board. It is always a pleasure, sir.
My pleasure. Enjoyed it a lot.
All right, everyone. That's going to do it for us. We will see you on episode 145. Wow, that 150 is coming up really fast.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yikes. Sesquicentennial. Remember when I did that years ago?
Yes, at another place?
Yes.
Right.
Because I graduated in 1986 and it's on my high school diploma. All right. There we go. Gotcha. There's a cute little story for you. Have a good week, everybody.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2018.
Cinnamon Kind Bars, a dried pineapple that is packaged as its own snack. A bar called One that kind of tastes like mango or a fruit roll-up. Some of the snacks that you can have here at Google I.O. What do you think, Joe? Have you had any of these before?